Welcome to Head Over Feels, the podcast where we discuss matters of the heart while also using our heads, blending emotional awareness with intellectual relationship skills.
We promise raw, real, and sometimes ridiculous advice on love, sex, and relationships.
I'm Megan Sundra.
And I'm Fernando DV. We're here to tag team you with juicy insights, tantalizing tools, and sometimes embarrassing anecdotes in order to help you have the best love life ever.
On this week's episode, we'll be talking about egg.
Eggs. Hard-boiled eggs, fried eggs, poached eggs, all the eggs you could fucking get.
Straight into your mouth. On this week's episode, we will be answering letters about dick hardening, unshaved legs, recreating vacation sex, and the book Daring Greatly. Love getting you with those intro lines. That's so fun.
Always. We're just coming out of the gate, dick hardening. Right. Nothing soft about that.
No. So I was thinking about our last episode, how we were talking about safe words, and I totally had this idea that I wanted to bring up, but I forgot. So I think it would be hilarious, especially if you lived with your partner, to incorporate your safe word into your home decor.
Oh, tell me more about this.
Nobody has to know, but you know, if it's pineapple, you could like buy some cheesy wall hangings that are like wood carvings of pineapples that say love lives in this house or live, laugh, love, or you know, some bullshit. And people who come over might be like, what's with the pineapples? And you're just like, oh, don't worry about it.
I love it. It's like a visual reinforcement for your
right. It's cute and it's naughty and no one has to know. Oh, I think that's hilarious.
That's great. So then you're like, if you're ever like, what is my safe word? You're like, oh God, I'm surrounded by pineapple.
Totally. Or put it in like your centerpiece on your table or as a wreath on your door. If it's like a, you know, a thing you can make into a wreath. I don't know. If your safe word is snake, just like weave some plastic snakes into a wreath.
Oh my God.
Okay, we're getting off the rails.
Oh, but let's go back on the rails for a second. Okay. There is, I've seen people who do this where they take out, you know, those like stock photos in like picture frames?
Yes.
And so someone would do, I forget it was a Reddit or something. Well, they would actually go through like someone's like house who had like all these in their family, but then like start with like one picture and put someone else on it.
I love that.
So then, but then they would eventually do it for every picture in the house, replacing the same person with a different picture altogether.
Oh my God, that's
brilliant.
To see
if they would notice. So like, what if you did that for like, I don't know, Sarah Jessica Parker and have that replace every picture? And people are like, why are there so many pictures of Sarah Jessica Parker in your house? It's right. Kind of creepy. Like, did you take a picture? They're like, no. Like, no, why is she cut out over your face?
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
Speaking of brilliance, did you know that?
Yes! Go with it! Yes!
Did you know that we also offer one-on-one coaching?
Yes! You can find out more and talk to us with a free consultation by going to headoverfeelspod.com/coaching.
And unrelated to coaching, but everything related to the podcast, we also have a Facebook group.
Yeah, please do go join. Fernando, you are on a roll today. Oh my God. It's called Rebel Hearts, and it's a place where you can be yourself and talk about kinky things and sexy things and just be all out there. We talk about the episodes and we share memes and have discussions. We'd love to have you there. It's a safe space we're trying to curate among the wild west of the internet where people can just be open about who they are and the things they want to talk about.
Yeah. Unrelated to eggs, but everything related to the podcast and the well-being of our sanity. Please like, subscribe, and review us, especially iTunes reviews.
Yeah, go on to Apple Podcasts app, and that's the easiest and quickest way that you can leave us a rating, 5-star rating preferred, and a review. Share your love. We really would appreciate it. And if you've been listening for this long, what's keeping you? Why has it been so long? Leave us a review.
We're not going to be like passive aggressive about it, but fucking please.
Right. And this podcast is free to listen to, but not free to produce. And we do have a PayPal donation button on our website. Yes. Just so you know, it's there. You know, we're not telling you what to do with it, but it's there.
It's a request we have.
Absolutely.
It's a request. And you're going to be paying for our podcast hosting fees and the wine we use for the,
for the podcast. Very important tools to the podcasting professionals.
It's all write-offs. So,
do you want to read questions 1 and 3?
I'll go ahead. Yeah. Let's start this off. All right, our first letter comes from Devin, it's a 23-year-old straight man. He writes, not going to lie, sometimes my dick isn't as hard as other times. It seems kind of random, but I'd like to learn ways to make it harder more often. It's pretty awkward when it's not fully hard when I'm hooking up with a new girl and I can tell she notices and isn't stoked. What can I do?
First of all, I'm interested in the reasons why you want it harder. I mean, the only one that you mentioned is that you can tell a partner isn't stoked about it. Which, like, I hope you're not internalizing any shame that anybody's throwing at you, because sometimes dicks just aren't hard, and that's okay. And people need to not, like, place so much importance on it. But on the other hand, you know, dicks feel great. And so if she was excited to receive one and, like, it's not hard enough for penetration, like, it can be disappointing, but it's your partner's responsibility to, like, suck it up and not voice their disappointment in a way that makes you feel bad. There's lots of other fun, sexy things you can do together that don't require hard dicks, and those should be valued, you know?
You know, speaking a similar experience, like, you know, you're also a young, spry male. And, you know, there's going to be a number of things that can affect this. I know sometimes it's like if I'm stressed, I'm tired. Like, big one for me is tired. If I'm tired, it's like I can be half in and half out. Or like if I'm not getting enough stimulation, sometimes I just need to be touched a little bit more, squeezed or slapped or scratched to where I'm like, okay, like I'm still engaged into it.
Get the blood flowing.
Yeah. Sometimes for the woo crowd out there, this maybe it's a little more of an energetic thing where you can feel like there's an imbalance. You're not feeling connected to the person. You're like, yeah, you're not really engaged. You know, it's like, yes, there may be a really sexy person in front of you, but it's like there's something else. There's another piece of the chemistry that's missing.
Yeah. You know? Or you could be sensing the pressure or expectations they have on you too. Ooh. That's a quick boner killer.
Yeah. You know, another thing too is that having, longer or more foreplay, you know, take some time to get acclimated to each other's bodies. Just also, you know, like as alluding to earlier, just if you're just not in the mood, you're not in the mood. Mm-hmm. And just because your dick is not hard doesn't mean that your interest, like the hardness of your dick does not also indicate your interest in the sex.
So true.
Because sometimes it's like, yeah, I'm not hard, but I'm very interested. So let's, you know, we can take time and explore and play around. Also, if your alcohol cannot put out your hard on, couldn't think of a really good pun for that one, but that's all has to be said about that one. So lighten up on the drinks or just, you know, maybe stick to one because no one likes a sloppy fuck.
And like the thing that makes you hard and keeps you hard is the amount of blood flow into the penis, right? And so things to increase that blood flow are ways that your dick will get harder or sooner or last longer. So some really basic things like being in good shape, eating a really healthy diet, things that improve your circulation, exercising daily, just like really being in your body and treating it with love and respect is really great. Maybe that sounds boring and not sexy, but it has like long-term benefits, right?
Yes. Yeah. It all connects anyway.
Yeah. And this is how Viagra functions and all the other related pills out there that increase your blood flow. There's also like recreational substances that increase blood flow. There are some herbal over-the-counter things that can actually increase blood flow too. And since we're not doctors or experts on the topic, definitely consult your own experts and do your own research. But there are short-term solutions if you want to use them and see how you feel about them. If this is like chronic and it's eating away at you, and if it's like you're getting in your head about this too much, then it could prevent future boners in a bad way.
Also, speaking of, are you in your head? That is also another one. Like if you're not present and you're just kind of thinking of all these other things, that's also going to be another boner killer. And one that sticks out as well is that if you're watching, like, let's say if you're consuming lots of porn, that can also definitely affect the way that you're or like releasing physiologically. So take a break, like a month or something, a month or two.
Oh, yeah.
Because that can also have, even just showing, taking a break for like a month or two can show a market increase. You're like, so you're like acclimating to like, you know, real bodies and not just visual stimuli.
Mm-hmm. Which are like dolled up, hyper accentuated bodies. So not a realistic depiction of real sex, right?
Yeah.
So your boner can become accustomed to these hyper-stimulating experiences, especially if you're scrolling through like a lot of porn. So you're increasing the amount of variety and things like that that can start skewing your perception. Mm. Smoking cigarettes decreases blood flow and circulation. So if you are a smoker, maybe try to cut back on that and see how your body responds. And perhaps easiest and most effective might be cock rings.
Ooh, tell us more, Meg.
Yeah. That's a really common and accessible way for people who have penises to maintain erections. So, and it can increase sensitivity and just really enhance your pleasure as well. So it's not just for your partner. So they make tons of different kinds of cock rings out there. Look online, read up on the pros and cons of each kind. Go to your local sex shop, support feminist sex shops. But a really great starter would be a silicone cock ring because they're stretchy, they're easy to wash, they're easy to take off, because that is a big risk when people put things around their dicks that aren't made to go around their dicks and have to go to the emergency room to get them removed. So be very careful with like wood or steel rings.
Ooh,
or
Jesus fucking Christ.
Oh yeah, they're out there, you know. Start easy with something nice and stretchy. And so you can put it just at the base of the shaft, or you can envelop both the base of the shaft and the balls and get like all that scooped up together. And so so that way blood flows in, but it doesn't flow out at the same rate. And so you are accumulating that blood flow and blood pressure in the penis and kind of keeping it there. So that might be a great place to start. And, you know, it's fun and sexy. And look at you being adventurous, bringing out a sex toy. I don't know. Yeah. It's not something to look at like, oh, I'm broken, but rather here's a fun toy that can enhance all of our experiences. Some of them have little mini vibrators on them, too. So your partner can feel a little vibration. Yeah. A whole world to explore.
Yeah, I have actually never used cock ring.
Oh, really?
So now I'm curious. Yeah. I've heard of it, but I haven't just delved into it. But that sounds great.
Right? They're usually not that expensive either.
Yeah. So. I definitely am not excited about the wood one.
Dude, I've heard of people like putting their wedding ring or something on their dick.
What?
And then it gets stuck.
No.
It's happened.
How the fuck? How small is their kind of wedding ring?
I mean, it must have been small enough when it was soft. I don't know. I just read some news headline about
that's
it once.
Gonna be, that just like, that just hurts even thinking about
collective
that.
Cringe.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for writing, Devin. I hope that these sound like fun and exciting tips for you to explore and maintain a hard on. But, you know, if they don't work out either, don't be too hard on yourself. No, man, walked right into that one. Shit. But no two dicks are alike. So don't judge yours based on any others that you see or hear about or read about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay to be a softie. If you didn't come here for the relationship and sex advice, I hope you came.
We hope you stay for the puns. All right. Letter number two comes from Avidair, who is a 25-year-old straight woman. Hi, I could use some advice on how to deal with people who make comments about me not shaving my legs. For some background, I come from a pretty middle-of-the-road family and culture, so I was taught my whole life that women are supposed to shave their legs. That's just what everyone does. I never enjoyed it, but I didn't question it much either until recently. My new roommate and her friends all don't shave their legs. They're not like extreme hippies or anything, but definitely more eccentric people. At first, I just kind of accepted their unusual lifestyle quirks and assumed it just wasn't for me. But when I asked her for more about her experience and why she doesn't shave her legs, she had a really interesting perspective, and I realized I didn't have any valid arguments against it. A few months went by, and I read the articles she recommended to me, and eventually I decided I'd like to give it a try. I definitely agree with the idea that this shouldn't be something women are expected to do, and honestly, I hate that we have so much disproportionate work and upkeep to do on our bodies than men do. I could save a lot of time, money, and effort and irritated skin by stopping shaving, so I did. I went on a date in August with a guy I met on a dating app, and as we were walking in the park, he made a negative comment about my hairy legs, implying it was weird or gross. I was hurt and thought this was rude, but didn't know what to say to defend myself without launching into a whole feminist rant. His attitude probably contributed to our dynamic becoming weird and communication fizzling out after another week or two. I've chatted with a few people since then, but haven't gone on dates that show my legs yet. I know it's been a while, but I feel like I need to hold out for the right person, you know? So how do I handle this in the future? I think I'd like to continue not shaving, not necessarily forever. Like, I'll do it once in a while, probably, but I'm worried it'll turn every guy away. Should I just suck it up and start shaving again?
No, thanks for writing everything.
Yeah.
No, you don't have to do that. Fuck that shit.
If you're not willing to give a feminist rant, I will right now.
Go with Maggie.
I have really strong feelings on this. This is something that I've experienced kind of similarly to you. So take it from future Meg or future Avidere, I guess, if you want to envision somebody who's sort of like played around with this a little. And I have a lot of friends, too, who on occasion choose not to shave. And it's great that you can experiment with your body and try new things and just sort of see what sticks and what works for you and what you feel about it. I have gone long periods of time and I still do go without shaving my legs. And I've found that this is a very effective filter for the people in your life. And that helps cushion the difficult comments that you may occasionally get about it. But their rejection is actually a gift. They're doing you a favor. They're removing themselves from your life by showing you that they are not an open-minded or tolerant person. And they're allowed to have their preferences and standards, sure. But you are allowed to live your life with your preferences and standards without shitty comments from random people. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if I have a friend or a potential partner who I meet who makes some comment about my hairy legs and how they don't like it, or they wish I would shave, or they won't touch my legs because they don't like how it feels, I'd be like, hey, we're clearly not for each other. Best of luck. And like, if it's that important to you that somebody shaves their legs, like you're valuing that over my personality and everything else I offer, then like, yeah. Yikes.
Yeah.
Right.
Red flag.
Yeah. So I've been lucky to find plenty of people willing to date me who don't care one way or the other about my legs. And that's an incredibly wonderful and liberating thing. And I feel loved for who I am and accepted. And I hope that you're able to attract people similarly because they're totally out there. You don't have to put up with people's bullshit.
Yeah. So fun fact, I was reading into this stuff because well, I want to actually share on that to add my own personal experience. When I was in school, I was wearing shorts in the summer. And I think the school, I was in view of the hallway. There'd be people who like fucking walk down the hallway and like point and make fun of me or like laugh and just like, and it was just like a weird, like, I don't understand why I was being laughed at just because I chose to shave my legs.
Right.
And yeah, so I got a lot of shame for it. And it was super bizarre.
Assholes.
I mean, obviously, I'm going to say obviously, but I don't shave my legs right now.
Right. First memory around shaving legs was being on the school bus in fifth grade, and the guy I had a crush on, like, told me my legs looked gross because I didn't shave them. Yeah, fifth grade. Isn't that wild?
What the fuck? Yeah. So I want to dig into a couple of things that are just interesting to know in regards to the culture around shaving legs. So apparently, women spend roughly more than 70 days of their life shaving and over $5,000 in a lifetime on shaving razors and cream.
Oh, God.
So if you value 70 days of your life and $5,000, I think we all do. Then, and this does not include wax or any other hair removal methods, probably increases those time and numbers
by so much.
By a lot. Yeah. So just fun facts. Or just facts, maybe not so much fun about them. So women having hairless legs, this started around the 1915. There's a magazine, Harper's Bazaar.
Oh.
I don't know what the fuck that's about.
I've heard bad things.
Yeah. So there's an ad. It featured a virtually hairless woman in a short dress with her arms above her head. And it was declaring that underarm hair was objectionable.
Ooh.
And that was obviously very a shocking ad because like women didn't show much skin back in that time. And so it made lots of women who saw that, saw the ad, want to be that same model.
Oh.
That's in the 1920s. You have like those short flapper dresses, and then there's like more skin exposure. And that's when the Sears, wow, reading about the Sears catalog, because that used to be like before we had before we had like Amazon and all this stuff, we had the Sears catalog.
So true.
1922. And that's when women's razors and shaving products started being offered. 1922.
Wow.
So
this stuff, like, what I get from that information is having shaved legs is not some evolutionary thing that we've been evolved to desire. You know, it's like the whole history of humans existing on this planet for tens of thousands of years, hundreds of thousands of years for like hominids, always had hairy legs. And I highly doubt that back in the, you know, Middle Ages, if you can imagine some people getting it on in the barn and the guy lifts the girl's dress and is like, oh, gross, hairy legs. Like, nobody had that thought ever.
Like, nope.
Right? Because like shaving it wasn't even conceived in anyone's minds. It was just like, ooh, legs. You know what I mean?
Good. Right? Human contact.
Totally. Yeah. So I hope someday we can return to that, where shaving your legs is totally optional and people don't have really feelings about it one way or the other. Like, oh, some people do, some people don't. Whereas now it's such a minority of people who don't shave that like there's this expectation and, oh, that's what sexy is. It's like, no, that's just what sexy is right now and what we've been taught that it is.
Yeah. It's almost like, or even certain groups where like it's seen a more acceptable, big air quotes on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at the end of the day, you're right. If you're not valuing a person from like personality and how you connect with them, then you're not really valuing the person. Then it's like, are you caught up in like the image, like what it appears that what does a person do from you from a like a social status standpoint? Or yeah, and that's not how we need to be treating other, you know, connecting with other people and valuing them.
Absolutely.
Like from a place of like, hey, like you. We connect on deeper things. We don't connect to people because, oh, they shaved their legs.
Mm-hmm.
That's like such, and at the end of the day, like we're all going to be old, wrinkly, and, you know, sagging one day. So like you're, that those fucking beauty standards are fucking, you know, here and gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, and when you're, in, we're in the days of shitting ourselves, you know, and pissing ourselves in public, you're not going to give a fuck about shaving your legs for damn sure.
Right. And for now, like, we give you permission to do whatever you want with your body as long as you're not hurting anyone else. And if people try to shame you and judge you and make you feel bad about your bodily choices, then those people are not for you and they have a journey of growth to go on at their own pace.
Yeah.
And if you wish to educate them, you're welcome to, or share this podcast with them.
let them know how you really feel.
Totally. And it's a really great way to play with your own sense of confidence and your own definition of attractiveness.
Mm-hmm.
So that way you are starting to look at yourself a little differently through the lens of like, oh, well, if I can still be seen as attractive, even though my legs aren't shaven, ooh, what does that say about me? In like good ways, right? And like, oh, I can be confident in these other ways too.
Yeah. So we hope that this has helped you shave these people out of your life.
Pull them out by the roots.
I'm on fire today.
I love it.
Our last letter today is from Marv, a 38-year-old gay man, and he writes, "Hey, Fernando and Meg, I'm wondering if you could help me understand why the sex with my boyfriend is so much more exciting when we go on vacation. We take a couple trips a year, staying somewhere new each time. It's something we both really treasure in our lives, and I appreciate his willingness to prioritize adventurousness in our relationship through our travels. For some reason, without planning or talking about it at all, the sex is crazy. We joke about how we have to drag ourselves out of the hotel room to actually explore the place we came all this way for. But when we're back at home, things are immediately back to normal, which isn't bad. But after being together for 5 years, we know what works for each other, and often we just don't have the energy to be creative after long work days. He's complained to me a few times about not mixing things up, and has caused a couple of fights, but I don't know what to tell him, and I hate that he's putting it all on me. Trust me, I'd go on vacations every week if that's what it took, but obviously we can't take so much time off work and spend that much money. Obviously, with COVID, travel is pretty much out of the question now. So what is going on with us, and what can we do about all of this?
Oh, thanks for writing, Marv. This is a fun question, because I think there's lots of solutions here for you. I know it might seem frustrating where you're at right now, but like, this is a fun question to tackle, because the solution is all like good things. I would recommend starting off having a conversation in a non-confrontational way. Sounds like this has stirred up some conflict between you guys. There's been some blame thrown around, and it's neither person's responsibility to make the sex good. It's both people. And that just takes awareness of what your own personal needs are and what your partner's needs and preferences are. So try talking about, like, you know, have a discussion to discover what it was about vacations that revved you both up. Was it the fanciness of the hotel room? Was it the fact that you didn't have a schedule and you could spend as long as you wanted on foreplay? Was it the naughtiness of doing it in a quiet bed and breakfast and you had to be very quiet? Like, what was the thing that stirred you up, you know? Because there's so many aspects that the vacation has that is different from your day-to-day life. It's not just different scenery. There are different factors at play. So I'm curious if you guys could get curious and dig into what those are. Because I think that would be very revealing. That's a good step one to be like, what is the thing we really, what made that different, right?
Yeah. On the note of vacations, just one thing to consider with those, that environment, it's a very permissive environment for casual sex.
True.
Because you're free of, you know, as you mentioned before, you're not dealing with the stress of like long work days. You're also, mm-hmm. it kind of, you know, vacation tends to promote, you know, lower inhibitions, mm-hmm. Tends to be like higher alcohol or whatever else mm-hmm. you want to mess with consumption. And it's just, so it just the lightheartedness of being on vacation makes it easier to be like, let's fuck a lot, you right? know? And you don't have to worry about waking up at a certain time. You don't have to worry about going to sleep by a certain time.
Mm-hmm. There's no chores to do.
Yeah, no calls you have to answer. Mm-hmm. And you're not working. So the only have the people that you need to interact with is each other. Mm-hmm. You know, absolutely need. Probably whoever else, you know, through proxy of like, you know, restaurants and other things. But, mm-hmm. But or don't leave the hotel room and get delivery. And then, yeah. And so additionally, like when it comes to couples, like sex frequency during vacations, there isn't any particular research that like says it's going to increase or decrease during vacation. But, you know, generally speaking, it's, you know, vacation isn't that environment. It's exciting. It can definitely increase the passion that, you know, the couple has for each other. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we can see that this is a nice space for that, but we also, how do we bring that home? Mm-hmm. That's really the important piece. So things that there are some suggestions you could do with this are like creating intentional date nights.
Yeah.
You know, I was given an idea from a friend, which I really loved, where every week you have an intentional date night, but the other person makes the plan. Mm. So that way you don't know the plan, what's happening. And then they're like, the other person is choosing, you know, so at least one dedicated date night, others and other nights you spend together, mm-hmm. whatever you two want to do.
Yeah.
But that way it's, you're creating that space where it's like, we're not worried about anything else. Just going to enjoy each other's presence and company. And I really love that because it's the intentionality and it's, you're trying to bring some of that vacation mindset into the home space because mm-hmm. it's easy to get lost into the mundaneness of chores, and work stress is nothing you're going to avoid from the day-to-day mm-hmm. life.
The rhythms and routines.
Yes.
Yeah. I love that because it allows one partner to be creative and the like planner, the inventive one, and like you're holding a fun surprise, and the other person, there's no responsibility on their shoulders. They just have to show up, you know, or follow directions or whatever it is, and they get to receive the spontaneity and the element of surprise. And I think that's such a cool way to bring those elements home. I was also thinking you could try to recreate certain, like you're trying to introduce novelty in your day-to-day life, right? Because novelty is a big aspect that was found on vacations. So What if you made some kind of agreement and like turn it into a fun game? Like gamifying this is pretty crucial, I think. Mm-hmm. Could be a cool way to do it. Okay, so once a week, we agree to have sex in a part of our house or our, you know, wherever we live that is not our normal place. So if you normally have sex in bed, especially right before you go to sleep, once a week at some point, gotta have sex somewhere else. So that means like, oh, time to be spontaneous. And if somebody starts getting frisky in the bedroom, can you like playfully pull them over into the living room and fuck them there? Like, just like really mixing it up and looking at your space that you already have in a creative and with new eyes, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. I was also thinking, what if you could take mini local vacations? Are there local bed and breakfasts, Airbnbs, things that are relatively cheap, even motel rooms, that if you just need to get out of your space, you know, if you need an excuse to not access your desk, your laptop, like whatever it is. Is there a place you can go? What if you had friends who also just wanted to trade houses for a day? I don't know. Like, I'm just getting weird here.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah. I like the idea of the alternating the sex spaces. It's like similar to like, you know how you, in some places where you have to change your password and like you cannot use the last three passwords.
Ooh.
So it's like you cannot have sex at the last three places that you had sex
in. Oh my God, I love that.
So you have to change it, but keep track too because you don't want to break.
Yeah. You could even print out a blank calendar and every time you have sex in an unconventional place, or let's say you did role playing or different outfits or whatever the thing is that you decide to invite into your day-to-day life, just write on the calendar what that thing was that you did that day sort of. And then at the end of the month, you can look back and like, wow, look at all these days we did unusual, creative, sexy things together.
Yeah.
And you can kind of start tracking that and just it holds you accountable rather than saying, I'd like to do things differently. That's just very abstract. Like, how do you put that into practice? How do you weave that into your week? Right.
Yeah, it's like, look at all the days we fucked. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. Frame it. but we hope you have some fun discoveries on this journey and let us know how they work.
So our toolbox today is for the book Daring Greatly by Brené Brown.
Oh, I'm so excited to talk about this.
I think anything Brené Brown touches is fucking fantastic.
Yeah, we're big fans on the podcast yeah. here.
If you're not familiar with Brené Brown, holy shit. I think start with, where should we start? TED Talks. Her TED Talks are amazing. Those are probably the most digestible from the quickest standpoint, but obviously everything that she offers is just is pure gold. There's something about the way that she speaks that's, first of all, welcoming and almost like elicits like vulnerability from you in different ways.
Yes. Yeah. We did talk about one of her books previously on an episode, probably a couple months ago on this podcast. Gosh. Go check that out.
What was the book? I forgot.
It has been a while. I think it was the Gift of Vulnerability or something like that.
I still don't. I vaguely remember, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll re-listen to it.
I love her style of writing, and she narrates her own audiobooks, which is really lovely too. She's a great speaker.
Yes.
She's just so warm and makes the content very accessible. She's a researcher and does a lot of sociological and relationship and psychological research, basically. It's not my discipline, but my fascination for sure.
Yeah.
So she's able to translate a lot of high-end, like high concepts and complex data and things like that into ways that just anybody can understand. And so I'd say that this book is pretty accessible to most people without having any background knowledge in the concepts of vulnerability or communication or, you know, the statistics of about, she talks about the ways that the genders experience vulnerability differently and the ways that our society, you know, put certain expectations on different types of people. So I would go after it, even if you think like, oh, that's not like my discipline, you know, don't worry about that. You'll still enjoy it.
Yes, exactly. You know, a lot of her, it's interesting because like in talking about this and the reminder of the previous book, her work, there is like an interconnectedness with her work where you see similar themes come up, but she goes into depth mm-hmm. on in different levels. And mm-hmm. so I know this book does touch on like vulnerability, you know, like what does it look like to, you know, to be vulnerable? What vulnerability is, like definition.
I love her definitions. Yeah.
So I guess let's talk about it. So how she is defining vulnerability here is the courage of putting ourselves out there. Mm. It's the courage of being open despite knowing it might hurt us. And once we are able to do that, we will also be able to fully experience all the joyful moments of our lives. And so, yeah, even just reflecting that last sentence, when we're in that kind of open space, we're more able to like be present and connected to the things we're doing. Because when you're walled up, are you able to like be connected? You know, like fuck no. You're like you're guarded. You're basically trying to make sure that you don't get hurt.
Mm-hmm. You're just passing through the world. You're not of it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. And when you're in a vulnerable space, there is a risk there. There is a risk because you're putting yourself out there. It's similar to like think when you're when you have sex with someone or like being physically intimate, you are physically naked. So mm-hmm. there's like a symbolism there of you are bearing yourself and are bare mm-hmm. to another, you know, with another person. And that can be intense for some people. Mm-hmm. So, but being able to like accept yourself and accepting the other person and hopefully them accepting themselves and you, that makes it a really beautiful connected experience. Mm. And so, and even with an outside of the realm of like physical intimacy, just being vulnerable with like a close friend or in front of a crowd of people, whatever the case is, that you kind of find a piece of yourself that you may not have connected to before, and having that transpire in all these different aspects of your life, just it does bring like a brilliance to your life that maybe wasn't there before.
So true. Yeah, I love that she touches on societal experiences of different types of people. I heard so many descriptions in this that rang true for me throughout my life. And I think you'll hear yourself in this too. And she goes into ways, not just about, the problem is that people aren't vulnerable enough, but she talks about how one could become more vulnerable in some very powerful and beautiful ways. Like it truly is a strength. And the ways that this will benefit your life and all your connections and your work and your play. Like it just extends so much. And I love the way that she finds connectivity between concepts, which really ties things together so nicely in my mind and helps make sense of so many things. I shared this book with so many friends as soon as I read it. I was like, oh my God, please read this. Yeah. It's also one of those great starter points if you have not read many self-help or personal growth or self-awareness books. Great starting point, any of Brené Brown's works. And so this one is a great, you don't have to have any background knowledge. You don't have to have gone to therapy. You don't have to have some elaborate vocabulary and deep understanding about yourself. This is like a great door to walk through to really start taking a look at the ways that you are and are not vulnerable in your life and ways that that's impacted you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even ways that, what does it feel like to be vulnerable? You know, examples like, you know, it's like where courage and fear meets.
Really love that. Yeah.
It's taking off the mask and hoping the real me isn't too disappointing. Oh, God.
Oh my God, right?
Sweaty palms and a racing heart. You know, these are just some examples. And even just what does it, how do you even practice it? Mm-hmm. Like saying no is being vulnerable. Asking for help is vulnerable.
Yeah.
Standing up for myself. So this is not just, this is not a pass for like, oh, another quote self-help book. This is more like how to like, I don't know, kind of be big in your own life.
Yeah.
And because, yeah, even just saying, knowing when to say no and standing up for yourself, that's applicable in so many different ways. That's like knowing, that's truly understanding your own boundaries mm-hmm. and respecting yourself, mm-hmm. which I think a lot of us struggle with, you know?
So true. You know, and I think it's very relevant to our podcast too. She talks about vulnerability and love quite a bit. And, you know, love and relationships are difficult and scary for so many people. And we try to hide it and we try to pretend that we're not scared and that it's not difficult, right? But being vulnerable in the context of a romantic relationship is really tough. And it's when you love someone, like, you know, they might betray you or they might leave you or they might lie to you or turn out to be different than you thought they were, things might not work out. And so it takes a lot of courage to love them anyways. And I love that she dives into that because it's so real. And I think we all need to be reminded of that no matter how comfortable we are in our current relationship or lack thereof. And just to validate that, hey, this is very common. So many people experience this. And there are so many types of armor that we put up to protect ourselves. And she does an amazing job of describing the way all this armor looks in practice. Because I'm like, oh, I know someone who does that. Or, oh, I've seen that in someone else. Or, oh, shit, I've done that armor. Yeah. Oh, my God. This book calls you out, but then gives you a hug.
Yeah, so we hope that you find some benefit in and digging into the works of one of the many works of Brené Brown.
Yeah.
And hopefully add some sparkle and inspire you to find ways to be more vulnerable, to understand your vulnerability and to be able to explore and really embody it throughout your life.
Yeah, absolutely. We love recommending books to you on this podcast, and we want to make it super easy for you to use these incredibly helpful resources in your own love life. That's why we've teamed up with Audible, which has thousands of titles of all genres, which you can listen to while driving, cleaning, cooking, or any other activity. We don't judge. If you sign up through our link, you can get one free audiobook and one free month trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/headoverfeels.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in.
To submit your question, go to our website, headoverfeelspod.com.
Also, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at headoverfeelspod.
Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and review in your podcast app of choice.
See you next week.